Hello and welcome to the Mercenary Star Podcast. We are a Battletech podcast highlighting the storied mercenary units in the Battletech universe. My name is Seth, also known as White Fox SG, and I am your host. And I'm joined today by a very special guest, my co-host for the day, all the way from the UK. All of that rhymed, and I didn't mean to do it. Fleetfoot Mike, Mike Whitaker, host of the Tales from the Periphery podcast. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm pretty good. It's what, 9:30 at night over here, somewhat earlier for you.
Yeah, a little
raring
bit.
To go.
Awesome. Well, I was super excited to get to do this with you, and also the fact that you love the unit that we're going to be covering.
Complete obsessive would be closer.
And that's fantastic. I am so excited for that because, you know, it's one of those things where I can't know, you know, as much about all of the mercenary units. And so some of these episodes are also a learning experience for me, and I absolutely love it in the research. So we are going to dive in to the 12th Vegan Rangers.
Vegan.
Yes. Vegan, not vegan.
Not from the planet Vega,
yes.
But connected to the planet
connected
Vega.
Connected to. Absolutely. And yes, I'm not, I'm definitely not, like I said, definitely not vegan, but.
Nope.
Let's see. I'm going to adjust your camera just slightly for a second. There we go. It was trying to cut you off. I don't want to do that. Okay. Well, we are on episode 18. And the 12th Vegan Rangers, loved learning about them in this. But first, let's learn a little bit about you, Mike. How and when did you get into Battletech?
Ooh. The short answer is about 1991.
Okay.
I've been a wargamer since what you would call high school, which is sort of late 70s. Yeah, I'm old. Get over
That's okay.
it.
That's okay.
And somewhere around about 91, one of the folks I was sharing a house with said, why don't we play some MechWarrior? So we spent 2 or 3 years playing a MechWarrior campaign with a Battletech tie-in, so that most it was, you know, Sunday afternoons we'd play a game of Battletech and do the role play around it, and then got married, moved out of that house, and found, I don't know if how many of your listeners will be familiar with it, there used to be an online game called Battletech 3056, which was a text-based sort of multiplayer text-based game. And they actually
I missed it, unfortunately.
How old were you?
I started playing Battletech in 1989.
Right.
And MechWarrior also that year, because I think that's the year it came out. And I did have 3 computers in my house in 1990, because my mom ran a business from our house. She built out the garage. So we had computers, and I was online, and I was in my early, you know, preteens, teen years. So I could have played it because the guys that got me into Battletech were a little older than me, about 6 or 7 years older than me. Unfortunately, I totally missed that. So,
yeah, it was an amazingly ambitious game. They had a text-based version of Battletech, basically
That's awesome.
Doing the hex maps on a ASCII screen,
yeah,
with the nice wrinkle that it was real time. So instead of it being turn based, if you started your mech moving, it moved in real time.
Okay,
which was quite sweet. They wanted to recreate the whole inner sphere in 3056, which was absolutely
that would
insane.
Be ambitious, especially for the time.
Very, which, needless to say, didn't pan out in the end. But I sort of they had. As part of the entrance lobby, you had embassies for all the various factions, and one of my co-workers was actually in the 12th Vegan Rangers.
Oh, okay.
And so I got roped in. Turned out they're a very nice bunch of people. As at least 2 of them are still friends of me today.
Well, that's good.
And I wound up actually role-playing the head of Gamma Regiment for about a year.
Very cool.
Which was kind of fun. And that's pretty much all the Battletech I did until sometime just after lockdown, mostly because I was kicking myself that I'd missed the Kickstarter.
Okay, yeah,
Dan at our club also is a bit of a Battletech fan, and he'd started running the odd game of Classic. And so we got talking, and I discovered Alpha Strike, which is my preferred, because I'm a war gamer. I like toys on the table and being able to play big battles.
Yeah, big
we run a lot of Alpha. Yeah, we run a lot of Alpha Strike. We run a lot of Classic as well, but we run more Alpha Strike, I think.
Gotcha.
And I'm actually chairman of the War Games Club here in Peterborough.
Okay.
So we play a lot of Battletech. I signed up for the Mercenaries Kickstarter, joined the UK Battletech Discord, started watching, listening to the likes of you, Wolfnet, Valhalla Club, Mechs and Men, all the usuals, and thought, there isn't a UK podcast, I better fix this.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you did. Absolutely, we need more. We need more Battletech all over the world, so...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, if I could speak some, I know there's a few in other languages like German and there's a Spanish speaking one. If I could understand them, I would listen to them more often. but yeah, absolutely. Well, fantastic. And it's fun to hear everyone's entrance into the game because it's all different, you know. I had Brent from Of Mechs and Men on recently, and he got in through the cartoon, which was absolutely crazy. Because I was already into Battletech, but he was definitely the first that I talked to who that was his first experience with it. That was really fun.
I kind of did, but I was, for most of the 90s, a bit of an anti-clan snob. So,
I mean, a lot of people were. A lot of people were.
Yeah, I've got over it.
That's good, you know. In the current timeline, they're all kind of mixed together at this point, right?
Yeah.
So, I did absolutely love the cartoon. Although, you know, I had to record it on VHS in order to watch it because I was never able to watch it like live while it was on the air because it was either too early or it was while I was... had an event going or something. So,
yeah,
but yeah, fantastic. Okay. And you kind of already answered my second question is why the 12th Vegan Rangers, but you said you got to role play as them. You had a great group of people who were doing that in the live game. And that's fantastic. I love that you had that. I definitely wish that I had had something like that because I had a group of four friends and we played and, you know, we played Classic during the 90s on the tabletop. We did not play the RPG game, but we had the RPG book, MechWarrior RPG book, and we would create our characters in the RPG book, but then we just would never play the RPG. We just made them into our pilots. But we loved the experience of creating a character, going through all the different, you know, rules and attributes and all that stuff. Now I'm obviously a big tabletop, you know, role player as well as a wargamer, but yeah, it was a lot of fun to do that. And so now as a experienced Battletech player, I feel like there's this, I like Alpha Strike. I've not hardly played it. I played it like twice. I do like it. And I've played other war games and I can definitely see how it's easy for people to come over to that. But I also love Classic and I tend to think of it more as the role-playing side of Battletech. Even though it's still a tabletop miniatures game, it's definitely got those role play elements with the crunchiness that it has. So
yeah, you have to trade scale for crunchiness, basically.
Exactly. I have always been a fan of that. But yeah, I just enjoy Battletech and all of its places. So awesome. Well, let's get into today's topic. You definitely did more work than me. in this.
One of the things we did back on 3056 was desperately trying to research any and every bit of lore there was about the unit, which Absolutely. At that point was almost none. And I've sort of kept that obsession up. So every time I find another mention of the unit, I will bookmark it. And you've Perfect. Basically got a dump of all my bookmarks.
No, that's great. That's fantastic. Because I have to, you know, for each one of these units, I have to go create that list of bookmarks, right? So, but it's a lot of fun. Apologies if you can hear my dog's barking. Hopefully you can't, but. Okay. So, we are going to get into the presentation now. So if you are not watching on YouTube, if you're listening to the podcast and you want to see all the really cool, for as little as we have, but the really cool graphics that we have for the 12th Vegan Rangers, definitely go check it out. And it is, youtube.com/ Mercenary Star Podcast, and give us a like and subscribe there. If you are listening on your podcast platform of choice, follow along and we'll try to keep up the description. So, but let's see here. We are moving over now. Also, you saw the clip at the beginning, but also don't forget, we do have a wonderful sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. Make sure to check them out, fortressminiaturesandgames.com. Always encourage you to support your friendly local game shop, but if there's something they don't have or you don't have one, definitely check out Fortress Miniatures and Games.
And for those of you who are listening, because I brought you here, they do ship to the UK.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you, and
there's
then
there's a box sitting through there nice. With a whole bunch of Iron Wind vehicles because I can't get them anywhere else.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. So we are, again, on the 12th Vegan Rangers. And this is definitely one of those units that has been around a long time. There's a lot of lore around them, even though they're not hardly in any of the novels. And they're in a bunch of source books in mention, but they're not necessarily highlighted specifically in any of them as well. So, but we're going to go through what we have today. And honestly, it's way more than I expected, but I am super pumped to go over it. So they were founded in the year 2820 by Lawrence Helmond Nelson, the Duke of, what do you say, Verde or Verde?
Verde.
Okay, Verde. We'll go with that.
It's from what we can dig out in the lore, it's a largely Spanish colonized world. So
oh, well, then
Verde.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they were first, their first appearance was in the Galtor campaign sourcebook from 1987.
She's the absolute, possibly, I think, first or second campaign book that ever came out.
It was very early, yes, absolutely. Let's see. In the fiction, so we're just going to kind of give where you can find all this information. In the fiction, there are two books that mention them briefly. The Trial by Chaos by J. Stephen York, which is a Dark Age novel from 2006. And then also A Splinter of Hope, which is a novella from 2018. It was released as part of an omnibus, Splinter of Hope and the Anvil, and it was released at Gen Con of 2018. I do have their covers. I definitely have that slide out of order, but there it is. And yeah, I have not, I've read Splinter of Hope and I read the Anvil. I have not read Trial of Chaos yet because I'm still working my way towards the Dark Age novels. But you said you have not read it either, correct?
I only found out it had a mention of the Rangers in it yesterday.
Okay, perfect. So, you know, that's okay. I assume that it's probably not a big mention.
I said that the then CEO of the Rangers gets one great line.
Perfect. I look forward to finding that. it's definitely one of those things where, you know, sidebar, I did not read all of the Dark Age novels. I kind of got out of it. As I've said before, as Dark Age was starting, because that was just the time of my life where I was, working and, getting married and all that stuff. And I didn't come back to it till about 2010, 2012. And so, yeah, so I'd skipped a lot of that, but yeah, so those are the only two novels that have any kind of mention. And in A Splinter of Hope, they're mentioned in, parts 3 and 4, I think.
Yep.
Was that it? Let's see. Go back to it. Yeah. 3 and 4, which Splinter of Hope was by Philip A. Lee. And I do remember the two mentions. I believe it actually mentioned a stinger, in, like a 12th Vegan Ranger stinger that was fighting with whoever were the main characters at that moment.
That's House Hiritsu, if memory serves.
Yes, I believe so. And then as far as source books, you know, they are a supporting mercenary unit, right? They are in, mentioned in a lot of these, but never the main focus.
They are pretty much as close as it's possible to get to being a House Davian unit without actually being a House Davian unit.
Right, right.
For all except, I think, two periods where they hire on with Merrick.
Yes, yes. I did see that in the show notes. But so I did not list all the source books. You did in our show notes, and that was fantastic.
There are 30.
But there are 30. So I'm not going to list all of them right now. Just, you know, let it be said, they're in pretty much anything to do with Davian. So, you know, NAIS books, they're in all the, you know, Succession Wars, technical readouts and books as well. War of 3039. They're in all of the combat, you know, combat manuals, field manuals for mercenaries, which is good, as they should be. The Galtor campaign book, obviously. And the Turning Points Galtor as well. They are in Touring of the Stars Old Kentucky. Now, I haven't looked at this one yet.
What? Only very, very briefly.
Just briefly again? Okay.
They sort of turn up and get written out.
Oh, of course, right? they're in a bunch of the stuff.
I don't think the author actually likes them, because he actually says something to the... Let me just find the notes, because it's quite a lovely line. Where is it? And I quote, "The planetary government was so cooperative that the AFRS only needed a few garrison troops to pacify the world. That would be an entire regiment of the Fedcom's best mercenaries then."
All right, perfect.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't think the author of Touring the Stars of Kentucky actually liked 12VR very much.
Well, you know. Let's see, they're also in the Dark Age Turning Points on Vega. And then, you know, Field Manual 3145 and Shattered Fortress, which I totally have around here somewhere, and I was looking for it earlier, and I couldn't find it. But yeah, Shattered Fortress was definitely one of the things that I was pointed to when I was coming back into Battletech, and I was like, I need to learn about what's been going on in this 100-year gap that I went. Because I, you know, when I left Battletech, it was... 3068, and the Civil War had just ended, and that was it. And I, like I said, I did read a first couple books of the MechWarrior Dark Age, but that, you know, that was about it. Didn't like them. They, you know, obviously as the readers, we didn't know what was going on, because, and they were like, oh, it was by design. And I was like, well, that's nice. If we had had the internet to know that that was by design, that would have been great. Otherwise, we all just thought that you forgot how to write Battletech anymore. So... but yeah, so Shattered Fortress, I got that, you know, definitely to look at. So I'll have to go back and find where they are in that. But let's see here. They are one of the larger units, mercenary units. They actually ended up getting up to 4 regiments.
Not anymore.
But even still, you know, I'm rereading for like the 5th or 6th time the Blood of Kerensky trilogy. And I just went through the section where, you know, Phelan Kell is talking, you know, he's under duress and he's like giving up information. And he says, oh yeah, we're the Killhounds. We've only got 2 regiments. Or they're like, oh, you've got 2 regiments? And he's like, yeah, we've got 2 regiments. I know it makes us one of the smaller mercenary units. I thought that was always funny. I was like, one of the smaller mercenary units at 2 regiments. And, you know, I guess if you're talking about that top tier, yeah, you had the Wolf Dragoons that had, you know, a bunch, and then like the Vegan Rangers and Several of them had more than two for sure. So, but Alpha Regiment, their nickname were the Concrete Crushers. And if you know where these nicknames came from, by all means, jump in. Beta Regiment, the Victories till 3057, and then they were the Metal Mayhem.
Yeah, apparently what happened is they got somewhat bounced during Operation Guerrero, and they felt that the Victories was not really a very good name, given they'd been pretty much decimated. And Metal Mayhem is actually the name of the then CO of Delta Regiment's mech, and he actually died during that operation.
So it was a callback to him. That's nice. Yep. Then Gamma Regiment, which was the Vela's Dancers until 3025, and then the Deadly Dancers.
Yeah, Vela Delacroix is Gamma CO for not very long. She vanishes out of the lore for reasons that even Ray Arastia won't tell me.
I asked
on the forum, how come the CO of Gamma Regiment changes from 4th Succession Warbook 1 to 4th Succession Warbook 2? And he said, nobody knows. Make it up.
Yeah. And then Delta Regiment, the Noble Nelson's Nasties.
Yep.
That's fantastic. I love the alliteration. Okay.
Three of those regiments don't exist anymore.
True.
Dark Ages and the Ilklan era, there is just one regiment.
I mean, Dark Age, towards the end of the Dark Age and into Ilklan, it's kind of a soft reset for a lot of the mercenary units and a lot of the house units, because they had, had kind of disbanded during the, era of peace that the New Republic tried to initiate. So, but here we have another fun bit of fiction. The 12th Vegan Rangers had a Ranger's Code. Why don't you read those for me there?
So, the other thing, interesting thing is where they came from.
Yes,
because
that's actually
part of the whole founding of the Rangers story. Do you want to go back and actually tell that briefly? Because that's actually
100%.
How it all happened. So Lawrence Nelson is the son of the Duke of Verde at the point where this all kicks off. He's about 15. He's just got seconded to his father on a world a little bit away from Verde. This is beginning of the first succession war. And they're chasing off a bunch of Draconis Combine raiders from various planets on the Fed Sun's Curita border. And a rival house from Verde basically gets them all assassinated, except Lawrence Nelson, who manages to get away. I feel there's a shrapnel story in there somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Probably multiple shrapnel
Probably
stories.
Multiple, yes. I'm kind of hoping so. And Nelson, one of the books that Nelson has with him is by a guy called John Lauren, who was a ranger in the Vega system back in the 2400s. And he wrote a book called 11 Against the Stars. And Nelson basically takes this as his personal Bible, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And it has these five maxims in it, which are: a ranger lives simply and honestly without delusions or manias. A ranger values loyalty, but never follows others blindly. A ranger must serve people and not corporations. That one's going to come back to bite them in about three centuries of time. A ranger must be prepared body, mind, and soul to fight for what is right. And above all, a ranger must be free to follow his own destiny. So it's a very sort of almost Robin Hood, if you like.
Yeah.
Being the good guys mantra. And Nelson sort of wanders that area. He gets signed up with the 16th Avalon Hussars and winds up on Nouveau Toulouse in 2813 after it's already been nuked once by the Fed Sons.
Yeah. So I loved this, inspiration that he had for the, 12th Vegan Rangers, which obviously it kind of goes into a little bit more. When he joined on with the 16th Avalon Hussars, he went by the 12th Vegan Ranger.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. I love that. But I also love that whoever was writing the source book where they started talking about this was like, oh yeah, let's also have him, go off of this fake book by this fake author, and to me, we have this awesome artwork now from Legends, the Legends 2 book. And so to me, it almost, you know, you said Robin Hood. I love Robin Hood, but I also think of like the Lone Ranger.
Yeah. I also suspect that that's probably Nelson in disguise to a degree.
Yeah.
Since he's going around being the 12th Ranger, there comes a point where a little bit further down the story, he goes back to Verde to reclaim his dukedom in disguise. And, and it strikes me that he's, if you're going to disguise yourself, you might as well be really overt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, best place to hide is in plain sight, right?
Yeah.
No, I do love that. I do find that fascinating. And I, like I said, I feel like, you know, I grew up watching some of the old black and white, you know, Lone Ranger television shows with my dad. And then, you know, some of the movies that have been out. And so I definitely, the cowboy hat obviously kind of immediately made me think of that in the artwork.
Have to take it off for the Neuro helmet, though.
That's true. That's true. I mean, you know, I'm sure he's got a hook in his cockpit to put it up there and hang it there. So,
given he pilots a Wolverine, there's not much space in that cockpit.
You know, probably not. Probably not.
No, it does have the cramped cockpit quirk.
Oh, that's true. That's true. But, you know, like I said, even if he's got to hang it somewhere, I'm sure he could do it. I do love that, though. And then the whole code, the code of the Rangers, again, just makes me think of that wandering Ranger. That, and then also the follow-up, right, where, you know, we'll go down a little bit into some more about it. So, obviously, he joins the 16th Avalon Hussars. You said he pilots a Wolverine and he gets that from a Star League era mint.
Yep. There's another shrapnel story for you.
There's a fascinating shrapnel story.
I get the feeling knowing that these are in fact also one of Ray Arastia's favorite units that he's probably got a bunch of headcanon that hasn't made it out yet.
Awesome. Ray, like, all right, we need something, Ray. Come on.
I'll write it.
Absolutely. Somebody, please give us some a novella or a shrapnel story, something. Well, so he called it. How do you pronounce the Nitmex?
Plateado.
Plateado. Okay, perfect.
I'm told it's the Spanish for silver. If any of your listeners or viewers want to correct us, feel free.
Yeah, please, in the comments, let us know if we are right or wrong. But yeah, abandoned from an owner who had left in the Exodus, which is fantastic. I love that. And then I obviously the note that you put in there says it actually had ferrofibrous armor and an upgraded autocannon. However, in Legends 2, it does say it's a stock AC-5.
Yeah, I've tried starting it up with an upgraded autocannon, and it just starts getting weaker rather than stronger. Well, the ferrofibra stops being useful.
Yeah, I can understand that. At least because it's a regular autocannon. If you're playing advanced rules, you can do the, you know, like precision ammo or something.
Yeah, but it's a good. I mean, it's a good upgrade in both rule sets. It's only 2 PV more in Alpha Strike, and you get an extra point of long range damage and a bit more armor. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I do like the Wolverine as well, so that's fun.
And then
obviously he kind of decides he's done with the AFFS because of, you know, they were still using nukes during the first Succession War.
I think the source books describe him as a bit of an idealist, which I think is I mean, let's face it. I mean, he loses his family at 15. It's even worse than Grace and Carlisle.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's been basically exposed to war from there till for the next war. Where are we? 2806, 2830. So the next 6 or 7 years, he's just doing the rounds of Draconis March. And he's still only, at this point, he's what, 21, 22?
Yeah.
Runs into one of the Draconis Combine warriors, a guy called Tariq al-Nahib. Who's from the 3rd Archived Legion, sometime around about the point that the AFFS have nuked the planet for the second time. there's a shrapnel story from about 2790-odd, where they first, they leave the planet under a veil of dropping six asset management weapons on one city.
Oof.
They're 3 megaton nukes. It's a bit somewhat overkill.
Yeah, yeah.
And then basically they come back to retake the planet and do it again. And I think Nelson hits the point of being very disillusioned. He runs into Tariq Al-Nahib, he rescues him, and the two of them seem to hit it off. They appear to make quite a nice pair because Nahib is a bit of a wise guy and also a bit of a realist. I think I get the impression he tones Nelson's more outrageous schemes down a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of brings him down out of the clouds a little bit.
Yeah, so, you know, Lawrence, it's a great idea, but how exactly are you planning on doing this?
Yeah. But I do like that they basically then just, you know, spent, you know, that 6 or 7 years roving around the Draconis March, being that kind of Lone Ranger-esque, you know, characters where they are just protecting people, you know, probably being a little bit of Mech Warrior Justice, you know. But yeah, and then eventually start
and it's gathering also quite people nice to that them. They're not your stereotypical pair of white heroes, because Nelson's Spanish, at least. I mean, he's clearly dark-skinned from the art, and sure, he's from Verde, so he's Hispanic. And Tariq Al-Nahib is obviously, being from the Arkab Legion, yeah, he's Muslim Arabic in extract. So they're an interesting couple.
Absolutely. And you know, obviously that makes for an interesting story as well, right?
Yeah.
Having them team up and then again just start collecting what will become the 12th Vegan Rangers, starting out in 2020 with about a company in strength.
Yeah, and then that Ray, I'm guessing this is Ray again, dropping little seeds in the lore, mm-hmm, of highlights while they've been there. Defeating Warlord Sotha, whoever he is, on Talmadge, and this one I just want to know more about. Bringing the 5 infamous Carbonell sisters to justice.
Again.
What?
I feel like you could do a half dozen, you know, shrapnel stories that are all just Lone Ranger style. You know,
yeah.
What's his name? Al-Nahib.
Tariq.
Yeah, Tariq.
Remember that surname, by the way.
Yes. I feel like you could have a story of just them and all of their ranger exploits before they even join up with anyone. But that's fun. And then obviously you mentioned that he returns to Verde in disguise. Yep. And
brings the unit with him.
Brings the unit, starts working.
And it's
locally.
Sort of, excuse me, Mom, I see you appear to be having some trouble with Curetan raiders. Perhaps I might be of assistance.
Yes. Until she finds out that who he is and tries to have him taken out. And then he just overcomes it. You know, I mean, barely,
there's a bit of a story on that fight in, I think, a couple of the technical readouts, because Nelson's one of the pilots for the Wolverine in the technical readout. He basically takes on a Hatchetman, a Thunderbolt, and a couple of other mechs single-handed.
Nice. That's fantastic.
Apart from a little bit of help from Tariq and his Locust right at the end. Yeah. As a Warhammer. And something else.
I feel like I do remember the Warhammer, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of them he whacks around the head with a steel beam.
Amazing.
Yeah, this is one of my theories why when we come to discuss the Lance, I believe Nelson has the Slugger SPA.
So okay.
Pick up a random piece of scenery and hit things with it.
I'm all for it.
The other little snippet there that also intrigues me from a story is Marvelo Kang, who is the House Kang now, who runs Verde. If you work out ages, you wonder if he knew her as a kid.
Maybe so. Obviously, she seems like she's from like the rival house.
Yeah.
I would not be shocked.
And that makes for a really interesting story.
Absolutely.
And this is, I think, as you probably guessed by now, this is one of the reasons I love the Rangers, is there's so many places you can fill out story.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if you're playing and doing some role play like you did with them. Yeah, you could absolutely. There's so many stories to tell in it. I love it. Obviously, the unit then goes through the Second Succession War. Probably Lawrence's son, perhaps.
We don't know. Remember, the Second Secession War is long.
It's true. It's true.
So it's certainly Lawrence's descendant.
Yeah.
Forms them into a mercenary unit just to stop the Federated Sons going. You become a house unit.
Right.
So and that's where they stay.
Yes, but still, you know, Duke of Verde at that point.
Yeah.
From the house there. Going into the Third Succession War, the Beta Regiment is formed during the 1 year of peace before the start of the Third Succession War.
Mm-hmm.
Beta are mostly hired by the LCAF to fight against the Free Worlds League. So, you know, again, one of those rare times that they fought for someone else. And are able to go through. Fighting against House Merrick. Let's see. And then during, you know, around the turn of the millennium between 3000 and 3020, Duchess Sarah Nelson expands the Rangers to 4 regiments, which when you're a Duchess of a planet, you have that ability. Have some funding as long as you're playing.
Alpha and Beta have been busy.
Yes.
Generating, making money and salvage, and they just go, right, we've got enough bits of various things here, we'll make 2 more regiments.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. So, and that obviously puts them on the map at, like, there's got to be what? Probably less than, you know, probably 10 mercenary units that have than 2, maybe 20 at most. Across the Inner Sphere.
McCarran's fairly big.
McCarran's was big. Obviously, the Wolf's Dragoons. You know, we did have the Kellhounds pretty close to that time period, like the early, you know, 3000s. 21st Centauri Lancers were a good size. I don't remember exactly how big they were at the time. But yeah, there's got to be, yeah, like I said, probably 10 or less that were more than 2 regiments, I would think.
Yep.
But yeah, that's fantastic. And then in the Third Succession War, they were pretty much all fighting for House Davian.
Yep.
And there's a lot more information about the Third Succession War.
Alpha seemed to be having the most fun there, I think.
Sure, because that was the Galtor campaign.
Yep. And we get to meet Margrave Sheridan Douglas, who is, if you've ever seen the movie A Bridge Too Far... If you remember the American officer who has a bridge blow up in his face.
right.
That's Sheridan Douglas. He's supposed to be brash, cigar smoking, and somewhat profane.
Nice.
So yeah, Elliot Gould in A Bridge Too Far kind of thing. In fact, to be fair, I think the Galtor campaign book probably counts as the most important bit of 12 Vegan Rangers fiction, because half of it's written from his point of view.
Oh, okay.
Excerpts from his autobiography.
A Mech Warrior's Life, as it's called.
Yep.
That's fantastic. No, I love that. I definitely need to pick that up. I do love that his personal mech was a Marauder SD.
This little baby.
Yes, absolutely. It's I love the alterations to it, for sure. You know, it actually was one of the first upgrades since once they got the Grey Death cache, Lost Deck cache. You know, it was one of the first upgrades and had 2 ERPPCs, a large pulse laser, 2 medium pulse lasers, and then was it 1 or 2?
No, that's the 5D, not the SD.
Oh, that's the 5D, not the SD.
The SD looks to be a field mod. It's pair of SRM-4s instead of the autocannon on the roof.
Okay.
And it looks, you know, your guess is
they look kind of the same.
Yeah, your guess is those have come from something like a Panther or something that has a, and he's literally just gone, right, I'll have those. Off comes the autocannon, on go a pair of SRM-4s. It makes for quite a fun mech. It's 440 in Alpha Strike. It's a right little brawler.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, 100%. Let's see. I gotta look at it again here, even though we're in the middle of talking about it.
Yeah, I've made that mistake before now.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, there it is. But no, you're right. I was looking at the 5D. The SD, goodness, so far down. Where did it go? Is it, I guess it was just, yeah, the custom variant. Okay. So
you wonder if he got the autocannon blown off and decided to do some field mods while.
Okay, but also what's funny is he does, instead of PPCs, he has two large lasers.
Yep.
As well.
And it gets him space for some more heat sinks and some more armor. It does make for quite a different mech.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then,
and given he has a bit of a tendency, if you read later on in the Geltor campaign, when he and elsewhere, he's a very much a lead from the front kind of guy.
Yeah.
So no, he's awesome. Not one of these who's going to sit off at long range and pop off with the autocannon and the PPCs. He just wants to get stuck in down and dirty.
Yeah, absolutely. So that one then. Now you've got that one there. Now where did you get that miniature from?
So that is,
I have seen it before.
Is a standard Command Lance Innosphere Command Lance Marauder, the 3R, and taking a razor saw to the autocannon. And there's a little 3D printed SRM pod stuck on instead.
Okay.
Literally took me about 10 minutes, and most of that was playing with Tinkercad and waiting for the printer.
Nice, nice. No, that's fantastic. And like I said, I have seen that before. Maybe it was your picture that I remember it from.
Probably was, yeah.
But no, I love that. That's fantastic. Let's see. Let's see here. I think I can actually show it there. Yes, I do have it. So if you're watching the YouTube, and not only can you see it in his tiny camera, but there's a picture of some of the mechs there. So, I appreciate a good variant, which we'll also talk about again in a minute when we get talking about the other stuff. But that's cool that he had that that different variant as his personal mech during the Galtar campaign. Let's see. There is so much information. We're not going to read it verbatim, obviously, but they also participated in the Fourth Succession War under Operation Rat in 2829.
Yeah, there's a couple of small points to be made. This Operation Rat is, my dear, I give you the Capellan Confederation,
Basically.
The one important thing to note at this point is that the CEO of Beta Regiment is Colonel Miller Al-Nahib. Remember that surname?
Yeah.
And he seems to be an incredibly long-lived character, because according to one of the field manuals, he is CEO from the start of the Fourth Succession War, or possibly a bit later, and he doesn't retire until 3117.
Goodness gracious.
By my reckoning, that makes him over 100.
And hey, I mean, maybe he lived that long. I don't know. Or maybe he had
it's possible.
Maybe it was possible. A son with the same name.
Yeah. And they basically spend the Fourth Succession War taking the Sarna March for Fedcom.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, with a little help from various other people, but they bounce all around the Sarna March and basically capture a whole load of Capellan worlds to make good on Hans Davian's promise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where they were located. That's great. That's fantastic. And then let's see, Gamma.
Then we get to the War of 3039, which is another round of beating up the Draconis Combine instead.
Absolutely.
Worth noting at that point that they are, when they're not off doing that, they're garrisoning four worlds in the Sarna March, including Old Kentucky, which we probably ought to cover at some point, because that's quite a fun little garrison problem. Yeah. And the Gamma CO has now become a lady by the name of Connie DeSantis, who is worth mentioning mostly because she also has a daughter who features even further down the line.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, and then they're on Campertown, Singhai. Yeah, okay. I love how it's like the famous Singhai red wine.
It does get a mention in a number of books.
That's fantastic.
Every now and then you'll see some character is drinking Singhai Red. It's likely. Is it Tsingtao beer, the other one that pops up a bit?
Oh, man, I don't remember.
I can't remember, but Singhai Red is apparently famous. In fact, if you look at the Sana entry for it, it's about the only thing the planet's famous for.
Fantastic. And then Delta, game on Old Kentucky, and then Delta on Chamdo. And yep. So, like you said, Colonel Riley, replaced by Colonel Connie DeSantis, and somewhere between end of the Fourth Succession War, Connie has a daughter, of whom we hear more later, as you mentioned. Let's see. They did go up against the first and second Ginyosha and the third Benjamin Regulars during the War of 30-39, which I found particularly interesting.
Yeah, that's quite an ugly scrap. They basically wind up stuck on two worlds, waiting to be relieved and dodging all of those units for several months.
And that was when they changed their name, right? Or was that earlier?
From the
victories?
No, that's not until Operation Guerrero, which is 1957.
Okay.
They eventually get relieved by a bunch of the Draconis March militia and go back to their cushy little garrison job in Sarna March and get to do absolutely nothing in the clan invasion.
I mean, there's something to be said for that, right? One, they get to survive through the clan invasion.
This is true.
As a unit. So we see Margrave Douglas retires and replaced by General Tom Stansel. Who's the first
Rangers character to actually merit a picture in a source book.
Yeah, I think so. Even more so than the founder, at least until Legends 2.
Well, yeah, Nelson doesn't get a picture until Nelson Legends 2.
Right, which we just got. So
he's also the first Rangers CO for a long time not to be a member of the Verde Royal House. He's basically in there on merit. He's been a Ranger born and bred.
Love it. And if you're watching the video of this too, along with his picture, we've got the kind of unit color scheme on there from the Unit Color Compendium. Took that from there, and it's just a lovely green camo.
It's pretty much your standard NATO. It's almost the sort of late 80s NATO four-color.
Yeah.
Four-color jungle, anything you like camo, and they don't appear to have a parade ground uniform at all.
That's okay. Not everyone needs one, right? I feel like they would probably be fine without it, but, you know, maybe if they had one, maybe they'll have one later.
it's fun to paint, anyway.
Absolutely.
Just layers of contrast paint works really well on that.
That's right. All right, so we go through the clan invasion to Operation Guerrero, and they...
Yeah, we should probably sideline briefly and just note, for those of you who want a really fun role-playing campaign, go and find the Hotspots books, which are date from the early 90s, and there's a whole bunch of interlocking contacts around Old Kentucky, where Gamma Regiment are, and they're stuck in about a five-sided fight. Because they've got the local Rostokov Tong, who Liao are supplying with modern... So, you know, you've got the Rostokov Tong, who probably you'd expect to be running around with a couple of salvage derbies and a wasp and a stinger. Mm-hmm. But Liao have dropped them a Huron warrior and a snake, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
There's Liao are backing some Marik mercenaries to drop in. And because apparently there are rumors of a lost Star League era training base, which has a cache in it. Some of the factions know about it, some of them don't. And poor old Gamma are trying to keep this lot in order.
Yeah, that would be a lot.
And my suspicion, this is me speculating, I should note, is what my headcanon says, that Star League cache contains cybernetics.
Oh.
And the other faction on planet that nobody's mentioned is an embryonic word of Blake.
Okay, all right.
And that's my headcanon. I just like the idea that this is a really, really messed up garrison job.
You know, it gives us a nice possible explanation for Word of Blake getting some of that.
In fact, for my MechWarrior campaign, that's what it's going to be. And if my players are listening, put your fingers in your ears now.
Don't pay attention. No, that's fantastic. It also gives you the opportunity to face a lot of different enemies if you're playing in that region. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, because literally, if you look at the map, Old Kentucky is right on the border with Merrick.
Yeah. No, that would be fun. And then Operation Guerrero is 3057.
It's where it goes to pop. Where it all goes to in a hand basket.
Right. Leo Merrick operation to reclaim the Sarna March. And so all four regiments are attacked and have to start retreating, essentially, from that. They face the 4th Tau Ceti Rangers, backed by some Free Worlds League mercenaries.
This is Liao throwing in the heavy stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Got that Old Kentucky things going on there. General Stansel decides to split the Rangers into two and basically to kind of retreat in force, sounds like.
Yep.
And then they run into Brian's Legion Mercs.
Yeah, this is where things go horribly wrong, because Connie DeSantis and the CEO of Delta get killed. Connie's XO gets killed. Mm-hmm. Connie's daughter, who is running one of the battalions in Gamma, basically has to take over what's left and run away. And they eventually make it back to Elgol.
And then that aftermath is when they change the name from the Victories to the
Delta are basically completely annihilated. Hence, they're folded into Beta and the name changes. Christy DeSantis, who's Connie's daughter, gets made Colonel in Chief of Gamma. And Gamma start getting lots of cool tech, which I can't wait for.
Yeah, a lot of C3 tech, which is pretty fun. And I appreciate how Stansel blames, that villain, Catherine Steiner Davion. Mm.
she starts pulling company store tactics on them. They used to be absolutely top of the supply line for everything, and that stops happening. And they start getting a little... That's why when the Civil War starts, they come down on the side of Victor, not Catherine.
It makes sense. And their ties to the Federated Suns already, I think, probably help with that. So they go through the FedCom Civil War. We're going to we'll get through this here just a little quicker. FedCom Civil War, are still on Algol.
The bits that materially affect the regiment's history are Beta during that they survive the Civil War. Beta get pretty much decimated during the Jihad. Gamma get absolutely slaughtered by McCarran's armored cavalry. That's not the first time they've run into them. Then the Rangers are down to Alpha and Beta by 3069.
Yeah, absolutely. And so then they. That's the kind of the assumption that maybe Christy DeSantis doesn't survive that, possibly. Again, all of this is so much information for not having, that much fiction.
Not having the story, yeah, right, absolutely. Right,
But it's fantastic. I do love it. They go through 3073, and the survivors end up... kind of retreating to Rockstock, and they do escape annihilation, and then let's see, by 3077 are consolidated into one regiment again, essentially. And
we're now under Miller al-Nahib, who I think it's a reasonable guess is the legendary Tariq al-Nahib's great
yes
grandson. And as I said, Mr. very long lived.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then they defeat a large Word of Blake force almost single-handedly, and then
narrowly avoid getting nuked on Terra.
And that's fantastic that they avoid that, because otherwise they would have been lost along with many other mercenary units who were nuked or plague bombed or whatever during the, you know, the Blakist era. yeah, and then going into the Dark Age, re-signed with the Fed Sons for some more garrison duty. Still an A-rated mercenary unit with the Wolf Dragoons, you know, Mercenary Review Bonding Commission. And then, let's see. I do like how there was like a mention of like 3093, there was a volcano, a planet affecting volcanic event that they had to leave Bennett 3 for. You know.
And again, just a little sort of sideways passing mention in the lore if anybody fancies writing a story for Shrapnel.
Yeah, yeah. Again, another possible good story. But yeah, let's see.
Then it goes all quiet for a good 2 decades, which is quite good for the Rangers.
Right, they probably needed it, for sure. Going into Dark Age, Miller al-Nahib finally gives it up in 3016. And yeah, between 80 and 100 years old, probably 100 years old. And then Della al-Nahib takes his place as the CEO. And so, you know, we get her as the CEO going into a fairly lucrative contract with the Merrick Stewart Commonwealth for the next 20 years, which is the first time that the regiment as a whole is not under...
if you don't count that brief excursion with the Lauren Commonwealth back in 28-something.
Well, you know,
that was a while ago.
That was only Beta Regiment, too. It wasn't the whole company. And then 31-33, hired by Jacob Banson, a suspected figure in the annals of the late Republic, to defend Vega. So coming back to Vega, right?
For the first time, actually.
I guess the first time, you're right. And face off against Sword of Light and Benjamin Regulars.
Again. We've fought them on Galtor. Let's do it again.
Right, let's do it again.
But this is actually one of the more fascinating bits. This is where we actually start turning up in novels.
Right. Okay. So
because
that's in the Chaos.
Yes.
Novel.
And as I commented in the notes, you kind of feel that this is the bit about a ranger must serve people and not corporations. Bannon is a bit of a dodgy character. He's like one of these big politician businessmen. I'm sure we could all think of a few people who would meet that description.
Absolutely.
And the fact that Della al-Nahib's prepared to deal with him is quite interesting, given the Rangers' code. But they basically, effectively, this is the 12th ER sponsored by Jacob Banson. Come and rescue Vega.
Yes.
And
yes.
she gets an absolutely cracking, do you want me to read it out? She gets an absolutely cracking line in the book. This
Absolutely.
Is General Della al-Nahib of the 12th Vegan Rangers, and we're happy to be here today fighting for the freedom of the old home world. Of course, our being mercenaries, there was a slight fee involved, and I've been asked to let you know that today's just-in-time rescue comes courtesy of your friend and mine, Jacob Banson. That's all. Please resume kicking ass.
Fantastic quote.
She sounds to have been a very interesting character.
Yeah, it's almost like she was a required sponsorship reading for Jacob
Banson.
Yes, Hansen,
it's like
you
watch those the but in my case cricket, in your case baseball commentary, where the commentators have to take one of these pauses
exactly,
to read out
exactly.
This is the Minnesota Twins sponsored by Gatorade or whatever.
right. No, yeah, that's what it sounds like. But that's funny. At least they got a quote this time, you know.
Yeah.
Then they get through 3141, working for, they go back to the Fed Sons, and then, you know, 3143, fighting against the Capellans again, and McCarran's again. And then, you know, this is kind of like the field manual 3145. They're still based there. And 3147, they're tasked by Julian Davian to be a part of Operation Styx. And that's what we see in A Splinter of Hope and Shattered Fortress, which really brings us to current.
Yep. I don't think they're any more fond of Julian Davian than they were of Catherine Steiner. You get the impression that he's heel risk mercenaries to save Davian line troops.
Well, I don't think
Rangers like this very much.
Well, so I reread that, and I think that's what they all think at first, but I feel like he eventually does assuade them that that's not actually the case. But he's also kind of between a rock and a hard place. And I haven't read all of the fiction about him for the end of the Dark
Neither
Age. But I did, like I said, I did go back and reread that, A Splinter of Hope. And he basically says in a conversation with somebody else, I've got to convince them that I'm not just trying to throw them out in front of us. And so at one point I feel like he does. Now, granted, at the same time, there's another mercenary unit in that book that does turn on Julian. And that's part of the story of that book. So
I don't think they actually get a very good press in that book either. At least there's a lot of words put into the mouth of the Liao forces that don't say very nice things about them. But then you can hardly blame them.
Yeah. So that's where they are. We're not really sure where they're garrisoned at present. You had a suspicion that maybe they're on Ulaanbaatar, but we're not sure. Going into Ilkhan, but they're still around.
Yep.
So, and at regimental strength, approximately. So, but hey, that is the fantastic history of the 12th Vagan Rangers, which, for not having a novel about them or a dedicated source book, they have a lot of mentions everywhere else. So,
well, they're just one of the big enough units that any time a source book goes, and here's where all the units are today.
Yeah,
you've got to put the Rangers in because there's four regiments
because they're still
there. You need to take account of.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about what we would make as an ideal 12th Vagan Ranger force pack. Obviously, there's not one out there, as of yet. But, what would it be? And obviously you had a pretty awesome list here. But I'll let you go ahead and start us off explaining why you picked them.
We start with, let's start with Lawrence Nelson's original Wolverine, Plateado, which is mentioned in the Legends 2, which is basically, it's the stock Wolverine with ferrofibrous, but otherwise pretty much stock. So you can just take the one out if you want to make a nice cheap Rangers Lance pack. You take the one out of the box. If you're feeling generous, then you get Persuade Catalyst to repose it first.
I assume that it would be just stock Wolverine, but because it has ferrofibrous, it's just got more armor.
Yep.
So okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, better survivability is always great.
Yeah. To go with that, I mean, Tariq al-Nahib has a Locust. It's, as far as we can tell from any of the information, it's just a stock Locust 1V. Piloted by someone who clearly has an insane amount of guts to come to the aid of a Wolverine fighting a Warhammer.
And several other mechs, for that matter, yeah.
Yeah,
He's obviously got to be a skilled pilot to pull that off.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that is... Then of course you've got to have Sheridan Douglas's Marauder.
Yes, the SD.
I mean, you've got. It is kind of expected that there will be one variant mech in a Lance pack, and I guess it's got to be his Marauder. And were it me, if you're going to go for a box with a prepaint, I'd do a prepaint in the Rangers four color camouflage.
Yeah,
because that would come out. That would probably come out really cool.
That would look really good. Yeah, for sure. And being the kind of custom mech, I could see that. And then you also had on here an Axeman, though. And in the picture that you sent us, you said Axeman or Hatchetman. And since we already have a jumping Hatchetman from a box set, I figured we should probably have a jumping Axeman.
Yeah, we've already got a custom reposed Axeman in the Somerset Strikers.
That's true.
But basically, this comes from Field Manual Mercenaries, where Gamma Regiment. Probably so they can chop lots of trees down in the old Kentucky jungles. have access to the Hatchetman and the Axeman. This is the whole being top of the FedCom supply chain for mercenaries. They can just smile sweetly and say, "Gee, the Buckaroo, the Dr. Banzai mech catalog. I fancy one of those and three of those."
Yeah, Yeah, you could absolutely see them having that for sure. And it's good that I now know that it's the SD, not the 5D, because at first I was looking at the 5D, which has jump jets, and I was like, oh, well, that would actually be an even cooler jumping mech, because we haven't had a jumping Marauder yet. But no, it's the SD, not the 5D. So.
It's the SD, which is a whole different bag of bolts.
But that's okay. I do love it as well. I love that it has the large lasers instead of the, you know, I find that fascinating. So.
And I guess if you want to throw a vehicle in there, then there's cannon for Manticores and Shreks.
Absolutely. You know, we kind of added that after we got to the Mercenaries force packs, because a lot of them have, or some of them have vehicles. So, and I love that they're including them more, because, and I can't wait to play them. I haven't played them yet. I have my Mercenaries box from the Kickstarter, but have yet to play with the vehicles and the like support, battlefield support stuff. So
looking forward to that. You'll get there before I do, sadly.
Unfortunately, yes. I know you all in the UK are still waiting, and hopefully it comes soon, but definitely by the end of the year would be nice. You know.
Please, I've got a big battle coming next month and I really need some vehicles.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, fantastic. If obviously there is not a 12th Vegan Rangers force pack, but if you need to get some force packs or reinforcements of some kind for whatever force that you're building, definitely check out our sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games, and obviously, you know, support your local shop if you can. That's, I think everybody agrees on that. We like to support our local shops, but Fortress Miniatures and Games, and it's fantastic that they ship to the UK. So glad for that.
And if you want to make the Marauder SD, all you need is a Marauder, a razor saw, and there is a link to the SDL file for the missile pack on my blog.
Perfect. Absolutely. Well, awesome. Well, Mike, thank you very much for joining me on this episode.
You're very welcome.
To talk about the 12th Vegan Rangers. Absolutely, me too. I'm super excited to learn more about them. I always knew that they were around, but obviously had not looked into them. I do love, especially with the art from the Legends 2 of him in the cowboy hat. Now all I can think about is that they're upholding the kind of like Texas Ranger, Lone Ranger mentality of go around and protect those that can't protect themselves, you know. So that's fun.
There are, as I said, so many stories in there to be told still, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, again, I love that about Battletech. I love that there's so many units and snippets of information all throughout all of the things that we've had over the last 40 years that could be turned into stories. So, if you've made it to the end, thank you once again. Be sure to go check out Mike's podcast, the Tales from the Periphery. They are the premier UK Battletech podcast.
Only? No, that isn't fair, actually. Stuart on the Battletech UK Discord does a very nice YouTube channel with lots of play advice for mostly for Classic.
Okay,
and
awesome.
for using flipping egg, what's the Mega Mech?
Oh yes, yes.
Which I strongly recommend. So yeah, shout out to Stuart, who's been one of my guests.
Awesome. Absolutely. Well, be sure to check out the Tales from the Periphery podcast. We will have a link in the show notes, and definitely give Mike's podcast a follow. He has had several fantastic guests very recently. One of the authors of many Battletech books. I'll let you give him a shout out.
Craig A. Reed.
That's right.
And before that, I actually had Randall Bills.
Oh, good. I haven't gotten to that one yet.
Man, was I nervous.
I'm listening to them backwards, so, you know.
Yeah, you'll get to... Randall Brin came over for their...
For the world tour. Yes.
And I managed to get an hour with him upstairs at Leeds War Games Club.
Oh, fantastic.
Which was an amazing interview.
Good.
I mean, literally, he's one of those fabulous guests where you can just sort of ask a question and sit back and listen for 10 minutes and then repeat, and you've got a podcast.
I was fortunate to get to meet both of them in person at Gen Con. Absolutely loved the time that I had talking with them. I did not get an hour, but I got to meet them, got to shake their hand, get my world tour 40th anniversary patch, obviously.
Mine's somewhere down here somewhere. It's buried. There we go.
There it is. All right.
This is one of the reasons why I'm working with the background. It's absolute chaos behind me.
That's okay. That's okay. Check him out. And again, please give us a like and subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you have any comments, corrections, questions, leave us a comment on the YouTube, or you can hit me up on Instagram or X/Twitter. I do have an email too. It'll be in the show notes. I never shout it out, but you can always email me. I do check it fairly regularly. So awesome. Well, thanks again. I think that will just about do it. So we are going to sign off, and yeah, we'll see you next time. Mike,
have fun.
Thanks again.
Roll good dice.